Welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. You are listening to the best of Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience, on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Good evening and welcome once again to Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience. I'm your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And, hey, you know what? I'm flying solo tonight. It seems that the mystical has decided to take the night off. I guess it must be the weather or something. She's probably out there, gone to the beach or something like that. But, hey, that's okay, because I have a very special guest tonight. So, tonight, on Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience, it is a pleasure to welcome a special guest to the show. Lynn M. Nickerson is, of course, one of the hosts right here on Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience, and is also one of the hosts of Edge of Reality TV, a monthly series on HC Media in Havel, Mass. Lynn has had a lifetime of paranormal and supernatural experiences, beginning when she was just a young girl. She is also a member of the Spirit Chasers Paranormal Investigation Team. She describes herself, I hope I got this right, as an empathic sensitive. As such, she is able to pick up on feelings of others living or dead and read energy of time and place. Her latest project, though, has been writing her very first book based on her own experiences. It is called Gateway to the Paranormal, True Personal Accounts of the Unexplained. So let's welcome tonight, as guest rather than co-host, Lynn Nickerson.
Well, thank you for that intro, Willie. See, I'm not at the beach after all.
Oh, I know it.
You thought I was goofing off.
Well, hey, you know, when I took a night off, you said I just didn't show up. So, you know, I figured I'd put you at the beach or something.
I don't want them thinking ill of me.
I know. How could anybody possibly think ill of you?
Well, you just never know.
No, that's impossible. That's impossible. So, you're writing a book.
Well, yes, Willie.
Hey, that's right.
Do you have any questions?
That's why you're here as a guest tonight, because you're writing a book. I know you've had basically a lifetime of experiences.
Yeah.
Do you remember at what age was your first?
I do. One of the first things was when I was about 7 and I shared a bedroom with the middle brother, my brother Wes, and we were in trundle beds, and his was underneath mine at a perpendicular angle. And I was 7 years old, and I was woken up from a sound sleep with something grabbing my neck and forcing my face into the pillow. I was sleeping on my stomach. And it held me in the pillow, and then it released its grip. And then I flipped around and it was dark in the room and I saw absolutely nothing. That scared the daylights out of me.
I would imagine it would. You said you woke up. This wasn't a dream.
Oh, it wasn't a dream. No, I was awake and I couldn't breathe because my face was being pushed into the pillow. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it.
As a kid, that was pretty darn scary. And,
you know, as a kid, that would be pretty darn scary now.
Yeah.
You know, I would think.
I was thinking if you were to ask me what is the scariest experience, I'd have to say.
Well, I could ask you that, too.
Once as a child and then perhaps once or two or three times as an adult. But as a child, that was the most frightening experience.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. Actually, I can't imagine.
Just you wait. Your time is coming.
My time is coming. Okay. You know, well, I'm waiting.
I think we're all wired for it. I just think it's really a question of mindset and belief.
Just, well, that could be. It's just my wires are a little bit twisted in the wrong direction, and they need to be unwrapped.
That's
something.
Right. It's just a question of attitude. You got to get an attitude adjustment, Willie.
Of course, I don't know. People tell me I'm not wrapped too tight.
That could be part of it. Loose connections.
I'm not sure that's what they mean, but, you know. Hey.
I think it's mindset, and I think that the ability is there, but we shut it off, especially in this technological age.
Yeah.
We have a tendency to shut that out. We're just so consumed with all of our electronic gadgets.
Well, that, and we're brought up to believe that, no, that none of this...
It's fairy tales.
None of this stuff is anything. It's all just your imagination. And some people, like yourself, were able to see past that and see that there is really something to it, where a lot of us just, it's nothing. It's imagination. So I'll just forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
And upbringing and whatnot.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Upbringing. That's, you know, the way some people are brought up is just don't believe in that kind of stuff.
As we get more and more civilized and more advanced, we get away from nature. We get away from connecting with nature.
And you got to have nature.
Really. It grounds us. And
it does.
That part of nature is all of the energy that is, well, represented by nature. And we cut ourselves off from that with our technological age and civilization.
I really realized that recently, you know, after I haven't been able to really walk that well for a couple of years. And so after my surgery, I was out one day, actually out walking in the woods. And I realized, well, you know, this is great. I didn't hug any trees, but I thought about it.
Hey, it doesn't hurt.
I'm sure it
doesn't. There are little tree spirits that would love a hug.
I'm sure they would. I didn't say there was anything wrong with it. I just didn't do it. But maybe next time. You know, maybe I'll go out tomorrow if it's not too hot.
It's supposed to be that. We've got at least tomorrow's going to be nice weather.
Nice and hot.
Nice and hot.
So, I don't know, I guess you either stay in the water at the beach or stay home in the air conditioning. but anyways, you consider yourself, sensitive or empathic sensitive, is that correct?
Sensitive empath.
Sensitive empath, okay. So, could you tell people exactly what that means?
I can pick up on different energies. Sometimes it's precognition, sometimes it's almost clairaudient, but most, I think, everybody has a little bit. Anybody who's psychic has a little bit of a variety of different types of sexual. Psychic.
You got the wrong show.
Psychic categories. And I think that clairsentience, which is feelings, and you can pick up on vibration of people living or dead, or events that happened, or events that happened 5 minutes ago, or maybe, you know, 2 centuries ago.
Yeah.
So, basically the feelings, that's the strongest suit that I've got. But then I get impressions of events past.
Yeah, and as I mentioned in the introduction, you're also a member of Spirit Chasers Paranormal.
Lovely and, group of people.
Oh, just the best.
The best.
And, you know, you are, of course, an investigator and the team sensitive. And I have, you know, we've gotten calls about cases, and I have just mentioned to you that it's a restaurant in
That's right. Yeah.
And you've, not knowing anything else about it, you've come up with things which later on, as we go through the investigation,
proved to be true.
You turn out to be right.
And the way I get that information, it's so difficult to explain, but perhaps the easiest way is as I'm concentrating on what you're saying, there's another part of my mind that is picking, that is a receptor, picking up some other information. And it's like a picture is being drawn and presented to me. So you were mentioning restaurant, kind of a broad location of a city, and I'm getting this miscellaneous information that is sort of coming in the back door. As I'm focusing on your words, other things are coming to me. And that's usually how it happens. If I walk into a house and someone says, well, what do you feel here? Well, I'm not really sure. But as you walk around and you're thinking about the house itself, it's like this additional information seeps in.
Yeah. Is this... come to you in pictures or
sometimes both? It's a combination.
Pictures and you get, and what audio mean,
you get a strong sensation of situations.
Okay.
Like one place that we were talking about involved the mob, and there was a trigger word. And suddenly I just knew, that the mob had been involved in that location. And it might have even been the word insurance, I'm not sure. There's something that triggered it, and then suddenly a picture presented itself. And that connected to other things that did finally bore truth.
I know, you amaze me sometimes, you know. And,
well, sometimes it amazes me.
What was I going to say?
At the seance the other night, the guy with a mustache, I still don't know who he was, but I definitely saw a guy with a black mustache. And the psychic came up with that, the black mustache.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting night, wasn't
it? That was an interesting night, yeah. So basically what I wanted to do was every time I've had a lot of, I don't know, things that I could write down and then sort of research and verify, I started keeping track of a lot of this stuff, and I thought, there are a lot of people out there that come very close to this, and or they have the exact kind of experience. And I thought, there's got to be something here that other people are sensing, that they think they're crazy, that they're picking up on stuff, because nobody else is talking about it, nobody else is experiencing it. And I've had such a variety of things happened that I thought there's got to be something in there that somebody else is going to identify with. Yeah. And also, too, the other thought was I just want to record this for, you know, my relatives so that they'll have something to look on and realize that this is part of our family's legacy, these different little sensitivities. Yeah. My mother was that way. My grandmother was that way.
I was going to ask you that. Were your mother was psychic and your grandmother?
She was. Yeah. And they both picked up information in different ways. Mom and Mame were both French-Canadian and part Mi'kmaq Indian. And I really think that had a lot to do with it. Again, people that are somehow tied into nature, even if their life is full of technological stuff, they still have that tie-in. And I think it's blood deep. I really do.
Well, I'm glad that you decided to, instead of just writing this stuff up for your family, that you decided to go ahead and write a book. And that the name of that book, of course, is Gateway to the Paranormal, True Personal Accounts of the Unexplained. And this is going to be out hopefully by the end of this month, correct?
I'm working really hard to get all these loose ends tied.
I know you are. I know you are. You're working like the little Energizer Bunny there. of course, this is based on your own personal experiences, things like dreams, how real are dreams, UFOs, ghosts, negative energy, even time travel.
Time slips,
which I know is one of your favorites.
I love that subject.
And
to be able to go and to come back, I think would be just the ultimate.
As long as you knew you could come back.
Exactly. That is the big...
I wouldn't want to go without the guarantee.
Stumbling block, yeah. Well, I had one out-of-body experience that I could talk about. I've had a couple.
Okay.
Did you want to get into that next?
Well, we can. It was a little bit out of my...
Well, this is your show, Willie.
Okay, let's do it this way then. One of the chapters in the book, A Sound of Crashing Metal.
Was what?
A Sound of Crashing Metal.
Or
a Crunch of Metal.
A Crunch
I'm
of Metal,
not sure,
yeah.
Which you kind of changed the title, I think. It's under the section of warnings, and it brings up a question because it is answered in this chapter.
Uh-huh.
Was there a certain time or event in your life that your intuitive gifts really started to come out?
Yeah. I would say that they started to grow exponentially. I had moved to Denver, and one weekend I went out to eat and I got violently ill and I wound up in the emergency room. I went into convulsions. Mm. I passed out. And when I woke up, I felt completely different. I started picking up on people's names around me. It was very weird. I was about 26 years old. And oddly enough, a lot of people, that is kind of like a pivotal age, 26.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And oftentimes this happens after people have some kind of, life death experience. And I can't say that I actually died, but I was out.
but you were thinking about it, though.
Evidently, yeah. Some part of me was.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were, you know, you had these abilities before that, but that's when it really,
yeah,
really
it took
in.
Off, and yeah. I really started paying attention to it. So
you think that the near-death experience had a lot to do with why?
I do. It somehow brings you closer to the other side. Because you're kind of walking a fine line anyway.
Yeah, I guess. Do you find that that's a common theme with a lot of people that are near-death experience? Well,
oftentimes
will
they
awaken
yes.
psychic experience.
Yes.
Actually, as I was asking that question, I was thinking of somebody we know that was struck by lightning.
Oh, and, yes, that's right, yeah.
I won't mention her name. But, uh-huh. So, yeah, that was another
case.
That
did trigger it for her.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, in A Crunch of Metal, I had, on my lunch break, I was going to go to a dentist appointment, and it was mm-hmm. on the other side of town. It took 20 minutes to get there, and that was all well and good. I got the appointment over with, and I got into my car, and I put my hands on the steering wheel, and all I could hear was this crashing metal in my head. It was thunderous.
Now, this wasn't like an actual sound. This was in your head.
It was in my head, but it was very clear, and it
scared
real, me.
Very real to you.
Yes, it was very real. And I thought, I'm going to get in an accident today. And I didn't know how to avoid it. So I sat there and thought a minute, and I thought, I've got to be able to override this. I've got to be able to circumvent it somehow. So I thought, okay, I can't go over the surface roads because it would take me way too long to get back to work. I had to take the highway.
Yeah, and they wouldn't like that excuse for being late.
No, I didn't think that they'd buy that one. Yeah. So I got on the highway and I thought, well, before I even started to get out of the driveway, my plan of attack was to drive at the minimum 45 miles an hour, mm-hmm. stick to the right-hand side of the road, and just go slow. So I did, and there were these people just whizzing by me, honking their horns, because I was going 45 on a major highway. Nobody was pleased.
Yeah, the 90-year-old, 26-year-old yeah. lady.
Yeah, I was driving like a 90-year-old for sure. And it had the egresses. The egress is that the right-hand lane would turn into the exit.
Right.
So I had to keep moving over to the left every time that there was an exit. And when I did that, people were weaving in front of me back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it happened a couple of times. And the last time that it happened, there in the middle of the road was this huge piece of sheet metal. And my first thought, actually, I had two thoughts simultaneously, were the tires all going to blow out? And was I going to go careening off the highway? And suddenly, I was over it. I heard that crash in my head. It was the exact same sound. And I got through it fine. But I'm only doing 45 miles an hour.
Right. So, had you been going...
Well, I'm thinking, I did avoid disaster. But would I, had I been going faster? What would have happened if I had been going faster?
I'm assuming probably the speed limit was 65 or 70.
And, I think it was 70 at the time.
So if you'd been going the speed limit, very well could have, you know, blown tires. Or you could have gotten there just 10 seconds sooner as it had fallen off a truck.
As it had fallen off the truck.
Yep.
And what would happen then? It could go right through my windshield.
And you wouldn't be here tonight to talk about it.
Yeah. So I thank my lucky stars, but I listened to my to that nudge. You know, Joni Mahan talks about that. She's got the book out, Spirit Nudges, and that is one of them. And I'm a true believer. You've got to listen. If your gut is telling you something, listen to that.
Okay. So I was going to say, I mean, I know the answer to this, but do you think that this whole episode was coincidence, or was it more like some sort of a guardian or maybe a relative looking over you?
You say coincidence?
Coincidence, yeah.
Well, I definitely think someone was watching out for me. Someone put that sound in my head to caution me.
So, I mean, definitely there's no coincidence.
Oh, I don't think it was happenstance, no.
Yeah, so you think it was maybe...
I think my life was saved. Yeah. I can think, I was reflecting on this today, how many times I've come near death. I've come near death quite a few times. I've nearly choked to death several times. When I got that food poisoning, I came very close to dying. And then that episode with the sheet metal. Yeah, who's to say, but I really think true. I was being warned.
That's true. You know, now that you mention it, I've come pretty close a number of times myself.
Truly, but, when you think about it.
Mostly in driving trucks. But
yeah, you've got to be grateful, and you've also got to be very aware, because there are people out there watching for us. But I think we have to listen to those little voices.
Yeah. So you think it was a relative? Or just,
I don't know who it was.
Kind of a... Maybe an unknown guardian that
probably
just
a guardian
out
angel
and just is assigned to you. Maybe, you know,
could be,
even though you don't know who it might be.
My mom hadn't passed away at that point; she was alive, so I don't think it was she giving me the information. Yeah. So I really think it was a guardian angel.
Well, whoever it was, thank you.
Yeah, I know. Thank you.
Okay. Well, another. Another one of the chapters, this comes under, it's called Psychic Vampires.
Oh, yeah.
The devil had blue eyes.
Yeah.
So this is a story basically about being bombarded by negative, bad energy.
Yeah.
And learning how to protect yourself from it, right?
Yeah, the thing is, you don't always know when you're going to bump into something, you know, darkly evil. And this person was evil.
Yeah, and then I guess you got to recognize it when you do.
Yeah, but sometimes you're given very definite physical signs and you have to heed them. Some psychics say that, you know, you should shower yourself with white light every day when you go out just to protect yourself. And I think that's kind of, you know, that's kind of overdoing it. But like if you're working in a very toxic environment in your work, your office, I think you have to do that. I think you have to bless everybody. You have to envision yourself in white light and maybe even envision the office in white light to ward off this negativity, because there are people out there feeding on you.
Yeah.
And this particular gentleman, he happened to be a realtor when I was I was considering buying a house when I was out west. And I walked into his office, and there were little signs all around. The office was really unkempt, and he treated his assistant very brusquely. And I thought, what is wrong with him? And since the office wasn't very well kept, I thought, well, you know, he's the businessman. I'm not. That's not where his focus is.
Well, yeah, that in itself,
it wasn't
just be
enough.
The way he was.
Yeah.
But that was the first thing that kind of caught your attention.
Yeah. And then I'm sitting in front of him and we're talking and he gives me this, well, what can I do for you? How can I help you? So I gave him some personal information, and I was kind of young and I didn't have a whole lot of credit history. So I gave him what I had, and about 10 minutes into the meeting, I started getting this violent headache. And I didn't know where this was coming from, but I got the sense that this guy was, he would kill somebody for money, you know? And that's what came to my head. That was the message that came right into my mind. It wasn't that I was thinking it. It was like I was told this. And I just knew that the interview was over, and I knew he really wasn't going to help me, because I had gone there hoping to find a property.
Yeah.
That I could lease or rent and then eventually purchase. So I left and I said goodbye to his assistant. And that was that. I could not wait to get out of there. I had a migraine by the time I left that office, and I drove home and I could hardly see. My head hurt so much.
And you said he just had cold, lifeless blue
dead
eyes.
Dead eyes. Oh, I just can't get over it.
I can see you cringing just thinking about it.
I've met very, very few people like that, but no one has ever made me physically ill. Mm. I couldn't wait to get away from him. So I had that migraine for 3 days. But anyway, I continued on my quest to find a place, because I had been renting and I wanted to try to find some place to buy. So within a month, I found exactly what I was looking for. And when I left the office, he said to me, "We'll be in touch."
Yeah, well,
and I thought, yeah, right.
I'll call you. Don't call me.
Yeah, don't even bother. So after a month, I found a place and I moved in and I loved it. And a month after that, I got a call from his office, not from him, but from his assistant.
Uh-huh.
And she started giving me this sad story. She was very nice. But, you know, "I'm sorry, your information didn't pan out. We just didn't have enough information to go on. So there really wasn't anything we could do to help you." And I said, "You know, that's all right. I understand. I found what I was looking
for." "That's okay. I'm all set. Thank you."
"I'm all set. Thanks very much." And then she goes, "Well, where?" I said, "Well, you know, in the same general area that I was looking." She says, "But where? What street?" Hmm. And I said, I don't think that's really important. But the point is, I'm really happy I found what I was looking for, and I really appreciate you calling me back." And then she doesn't say anything. And she said, I finally asked her, I said, how can you work for a person like that? And she goes, "Well, he's not really that bad." Because he was really,
once you get to know him, he's not that bad.
Well, she'd been working with him for years.
Yeah.
And I thought, he's got to have something on you for you to put yourself through that kind of abuse. He was just so rude to her. So that was the end of that situation. And then I decided to do a little bit of research. And I found people who knew him.
Mm-hmm.
That turns out
he had a reputation.
He had a reputation for being very mean and for being a slum landlord. I mean, he owned a lot of property himself. So I just thought, you got to listen to these signs. That headache lasted 3 days.
Yeah. So basically, the gist of this story is it was your internal intuition and your own alarm system.
Yep. Was my alarm system
that set you off? Is to you know, there's something wrong here.
Something wrong with him.
Mr. Blue Eyes isn't a friendly guy.
Yeah, he's no Frank Sinatra. But then again, he and Frank have something in common. Attitude, basically.
same attitude. Huh?
Yeah. So I read a book by Ellen Dugan, which I should have a copy of it. The name of it, the title, because it's really very good, and she does give some pointers on how to protect yourself. And that was a case where if you're going to go out and do business with sharks, you really have to be careful and do some protective measures, take some protective measures, like blessing yourself and putting yourself in white light and asking for divine assistance. There's just some
sharks
out there.
Yeah, I never really quite understood the white light thing myself. Maybe you can explain it to me one of these nights.
Well, all I can say is I used to think it was just imagination. But the point is, there's so much that we can't see that just because we say it's our imagination, at some level, that white light does exist. You can put it there. Even though you may not see it with your eyes, your mind and your spirit knows that it's there. So you envision yourself in the white light. And it's effective.
Well,
it's not just imagination.
Yeah, you're going to have to explain to me one of these days just how you do that. But, hey, we're at the bottom of the hour.
Already?
Yes, already. And we are talking to Lynn Nickerson, who is the author of the upcoming Gateway to the Paranormal, which should be out by the end of this month. And you're listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, and we'll be back in just a minute. Gateway to the Paranormal by Lynn M. Nickerson is now available in paperback and Kindle at Amazon.com. Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. And you are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
So what's next on the agenda, Willie?
Hey, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right.
It's a pleasure to be here again.
Is it a pleasure to be
still
here? Still. sometimes it's just a pleasure to be anywhere.
But to be alive.
But hey, that's just me. Another thing, UFOs.
Oh, yeah.
UFOs and dreams, actually.
Yeah.
And you used to live at one time in Sedona, Arizona.
Yes, 9.5 years.
9.5 years in Sedona,
yep.
Which I've been, I was actually there once and been through there several times. And
beautiful, isn't it?
It's beautiful, and the whole area is, very mystical.
Yeah.
Just like you, mystical.
Oh, maybe that's where I got it from.
Maybe that is where you got it from.
My gosh, we have a caller.
We have a call. So why don't you start telling us about the mothership?
Well, that is one of the stories from Sedona. I entitled it The Mothership. I had so many strange experiences out in Sedona. It took me about 1.5 years before things started happening. But one day, it was January 20th. 2003, I woke up so that I could see through my roof and see through the walls of my condo. And above it was this huge UFO that I couldn't tell how large it was because of my position, my vantage point, but it was at least a mile long or wide.
Okay.
A mile.
I was a little bit confused when I read it. And again, when you just mentioned it now, you said you woke up. I mean, were you actually dreaming when you could see through the roof, or were you awake?
I thought I was awake.
You thought you were awake, but you were
when I opened my eyes, I realized I had been asleep.
Okay.
Which really makes you wonder what is dreaming, what are dreams?
Yeah, where does the dream and the reality
start and end?
Yeah.
And you really start wondering that after corroborating information all comes together. So I saw this UFO above me, and it had all kinds of compartments underneath it, and there were blinking lights, there were steady lights, they were all white. And it started rising, and I got the feeling that it was getting ready to take off. I also got the feeling that I had been up there, but I didn't have any recollection of it. So even though I could see through the walls and I could see through the ceilings, I got up out of bed. I ran to the window because I wanted to watch it take off.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see if it actually blinked out like everybody says it does, because if it takes off really fast, and then it just blinks out.
Right.
It did that. It rose, and then it took off in a big arc. And when it took off, I could see that the rear end of it, I won't say it was cigar-shaped, because the underside of it was flat. And I don't know what the top of it looked like. But it was kind of long and flat, and the end of it was curved. And on the end of it, it had like pink tail lights. And when it took off, it left like this striated, it looked like exhaust. It looked like pink exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't tell if it was actually vaporous or if it was just lights. And that it happened so quickly that it lingered in my vision. But I think it was vaporous. So I think there might have been a little bit of exhaust when it took off. So I pondered what that was, because then I woke up. I was in bed. I don't recall going back to bed. So the next morning, I felt really sick. And then for the next 10 days, I got a wicked flu that I could not get rid of. And oftentimes, people that are abducted, they complain of being sick. And do we have another call? So I went to the clinic, and the doctor actually said that, yeah, a lot of people have been sick recently. So I just forgot my story. Okay. So I read a couple of books by Tom Dongo. He's an incredible investigator, UFO, strange phenomena, and so forth in Arizona. And he's done an awful lot of investigating, and he claimed that the area where my condo was one of the big portals, that there are UFOs that come and go. And I always thought there was a bunch of baloney. I just thought it was a bunch of New Agers that with wishful thinking, because this mothership stretched from my condo all the way a mile down the street to Bell Rock. Excuse me. Do we have a caller?
We do have a caller.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, you took me by surprise. Okay. All right, Jim. We on the line. You have a question for Lynn?
Yes, I do.
Hi, Jim.
During your experience, and you've gotten onto Sedona and UFOs here, a favorite topic, the high desert, UFOs, strange occurrences. Were you ever followed or think you were followed by those suspicious people in the black SUVs in any of your experiences out there in the land where they have UFOs and secret government installations probably hiding out there?
I actually met one ex-FBI or CIA, I think it was CIA, and he did tell me about some of the ruins out there, but he wasn't trailing me. He was retired, and he was very, very short with information, but he did imply that there's a whole lot going on. The government's very interested in the ruins, and interested in power spots, because Sedona is one big power spot, and yes, there are portals there. So I can't say that I was followed, but I did meet some people in the know.
Some people in the know, yep.
Does that answer your question, Jim?
That answers my question. So you think that those people are involved in this activity in some way?
Well, like I said, the government is very interested in ruins and power spots, ritual places. So a lot of them are astronomically oriented. There's just a lot to it. It's just not, I don't know, it has a lot to do with energy. There are power centers out there, and yeah, the government's interested. There's just so many sightings of UFOs, you can't get away from it.
Okay, well, thank you for your question, Jim. I think maybe we've been followed home from some of our shows here.
Just once, I think.
Once or twice. Okay, thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Okay. So, let's see, where were we? We were on the mothership.
We were talking about the mothership. So, anyway, I guess the crux of the matter is that I lived right in the middle of one of those portals that had been identified by Tom Dongo. He wrote a book called Merging Dimensions with Linda Bradshaw, and he's done an awful lot of investigation out there. So I felt kind of vindicated that, number one, I had this wicked flu that I didn't know where I'd gotten it from, and it took me almost 3 weeks to get rid of it. I just felt it was unnatural.
All right. As far as seeing the mothership, it was in a dream, but it was a very, very real. Do you think that it was some sort of, There was somebody, you know, some alien or whatever was trying to give you personally some sort of a message? Do you think it was an attempt at actual contact with you?
I think it was an attempt at communication. I've thought about this a lot. I've woken up twice with one spot of blood on my bed. up near my head. This has happened twice with no source. I couldn't figure out where the little blood came from, like a quarter inch drop of blood. So that's very curious in itself. It didn't happen that night, but...
What was that, shortly after that, or in later
It was
years,
during
or?
That general time that I was living in that same place. So I did not have the recollection, the cognitive recollection that I had been up in that ship, but somewhere my body knew that I had been or felt that I had been.
Yeah.
That was the message. What I did up there, I have absolutely no idea if in fact I was there, but I do think there was an attempt at communication.
So you don't think it was an abduction experience?
I don't. And I don't really know the difference, but I don't feel that I was put through any kind of trauma. I think it was simply information.
Yeah.
The longest time I thought that it was a dream, but after I read more and more, I just couldn't pass it off as a dream. It was just too real.
Yeah, and you just, well, like we said before, where did the dreams end and the reality begin?
Because it was my bedroom. That was the setting of the whole dream.
Yeah. So you don't have any recollection of what the inside of the ship looked like?
No, I don't.
From the outside.
Just the outside. Yeah.
Okay. And I think you mentioned this while I was answering the phone about the chemtrails the following day.
Oh, yeah. They were all over the place. I thought maybe I'd gotten sick because of that.
Okay, but what I was going to ask you, I mean, most theories on chemtrails, seem to be that it's a government thing, that, you know, the government is kind of poisonous or whatever.
Or somebody in high places.
Maybe not the government, but they certainly know about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's any, since this happened the next day after... The mothership. Do you think there's any connection?
There is. I don't know what it is.
So perhaps a connection between another race and a government, something like that.
I haven't really speculated on that, but that could very well be.
Yeah. Not to point fingers at our government by any means, because they'll be following us home again tonight.
Well, you know, there are a lot of good people in the government, but there are people, not everybody's good. Not everybody is well-intentioned. And sometimes, you know, for national security, they have to do certain things. But I think there's some kind of collusion there sometimes.
Yeah.
That's a bold statement, isn't it?
Hey, you said it. You're the guest. You can say that.
It's just a theory of mine.
just a theory. I think it's a pretty good theory. I shouldn't say it, but I wouldn't put anything past the government.
Well, some factions of the government, truly.
So I didn't say that. You men in black, you didn't hear that. All right. Out-of-body experiences.
There's
another interesting subject, of which you have had several.
Have you ever found yourself flying at night and not in an airplane?
When I used to smoke that funny stuff. Many years ago. But outside of that, no.
That was just a dream.
Flying in my taxi, taking tips and getting stoned.
That isn't exactly what I had in mind.
I know it isn't. Closest I could come.
When I lived in Kittery, I lived in this really neat old Victorian that had been cut into four units. And I lived in one of them. And the place was haunted. So many strange things happened there.
You've lived in a lot of haunted places,
haven't you? I think every place I go is haunted. Really? Maybe it's me.
Maybe.
And it's not always haunted all the time. But something odd always happens wherever I live.
Is it possible to haunt yourself?
Well, I don't think it's me haunting. But I think I'm haunted.
Oh, you're haunted. Okay. All right.
That's another whole issue. But I think you can live in places that aren't active all the time. But sometimes something happens, or maybe you become aware. So in this Victorian in Kittery, I had a couple of out-of-body experiences. But one of them, I went to a house in a former time. I knew that it was in the past. And I floated around this house, and I remember exactly what it looked like. It overlooked a big bluff. And at the bottom of it was a salt river. Mm-hmm. And I was flying in and out of the windows. I was flying in through the curtain shears. And the outside of the house had a little stone wall. And in front of it, it paralleled the front of the house. And then there was a pathway that went right down the center of it. And there were lilacs on the side of the house and the front of the house. And all the bushes were short, but the lilacs were in bloom. And around here, the lilacs bloom around the end of May.
End of May, yeah, June.
Very beginning of June. And that was about it. I woke up remembering the dream, having no idea where this house was, why I was flying around this house. And I saw that that's really a strange dream. Well, I moved into Atlantic Heights, and I'd been living there for about a year. And I drove around the neighborhood, and on one of these little side streets on the perimeter of the area of Atlantic Heights, I found the house. And it looked exactly like it did in the dream. In the dream, there were fewer houses there because they hadn't been built.
Right.
The little stone wall was there. The center walkway was still there. The lilac bushes were there, only they were twice as big or larger, but they were really huge, and they were in bloom when I found them.
And this was a year after you had the experience.
It was a little over a year, close to two.
I'm taking it that the lilac bushes had grown more than they normally would in a year, so it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because there were new houses there.
Oh, and new houses, right.
Yeah. Okay. Although the houses weren't new, but there were now houses there when I discovered it. And those houses were...
They weren't there when you
less than 100 years old, but yeah.
Right. You said that when you were going around the house, there was no furniture and the floors were bare, yet somebody did live there.
I was flying in and out of the living room, and they hadn't... There was no furniture in there. I don't know if... I don't know what the story was.
So,
but there was someone who lived there. The house was occupied. They just weren't home at the time.
Okay, well, what I was getting at is, do you think maybe you were seeing this place in two different times? One where there was nothing in there, and another time where there was somebody living there? Kind of like a double time slip. If you can understand that at all.
It was as if they were out shopping or something.
Right.
And hadn't... I don't know. I don't know what they were doing. It was the living room that I was flying through. And I knew where the other rooms were, and there was furniture in the other rooms, but there wasn't any furniture in the living room.
Oh, there was in the other rooms. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
I just knew that there was, but I didn't go in there.
All right.
So... A little more time goes by, and I finally asked some of my neighbors if they knew anything about that house on that street, since I knew it from the outside. And they said that it had been occupied by a little old lady. She had lived there for a long time. And then one day she won the lottery, and she sold the house, and she moved to Florida.
Went off to Florida to play shuffleboard.
Oh, whatever. And I thought, but why did I visit that house? What was my connection to that house? And I think the message was probably fortune. It was very fortunate to have visited that. It was a message.
Yeah.
Because some really good things happened to me after that.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if I picked up on her joy. I never quite understood it, but... It was like it was a gift and it was a message. But that house existed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was it had been built 1880s, 1890s.
I know you pointed it out to me one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the people there, the people that had been there maybe 10 years ago, made some serious renovations and changes to it. But at least I had seen that before that took place so that I could easily identify it. That was a shock, let me tell you, to find that house.
I imagine it was, yeah. Hey, this place really exists, and it looks just like I saw it.
And when I was flying around, it was all hazy and warm, and the sun was shining through this fog. It was just like another dimension. An odd dimension, like there was no time. It was like time was standing still, and yet the curtain shears were flowing in the breeze, but very slowly. It was a strange experience. It's just one of those things that are kind of hard to explain, and it's more, it touches your sensibilities.
Yeah. Speaking of time, we're getting short, so do you want to move on to, how about the house in Atlantic Heights?
Oh, okay. Well, that was one of the places that I did. That's a ghost story.
That's a ghost, under Ghosts and Hauntings.
That was really neat because I lived there for a year and a half before anything happened.
Yeah.
And before I bought it, I had asked the woman who owned it, I said, you know, is it haunted? I'd just like to know if it's haunted. And she said,
no.
So at closing, I said, one more time, you know, it's an old house. Are you sure it's not haunted? I'd just like to know. It doesn't matter. I just want to know. And she said, I've never felt anything there. So neither did I for a year and a half. And then I started doing renovations. And then weird things started happening. And one weekend, it happened to be October 13th. I can't remember the year right offhand, but
Friday the 13th, too.
It was Friday the 13th. And I was doing some laundry. I'd come home, I ate, and then I went down to do some laundry in the cellar. And I came back and watched TV. I had some laundry in the washing machine and then some laundry in the dryer. Well, the dryer was, all the clothes in the dryer were still wet. So I thought, oh, well, I just must not have pushed the button. Or maybe it didn't catch when I hit it. So I hit it again. I went upstairs for 45 minutes, watched some more TV, went down to check the clothes again, and darn if they're still soaking wet. So I thought, okay, I'll just deal with this tomorrow morning. It's probably the heating element that went. So I sat down watching TV some more, and there was this little stool in the living room. As I'm watching TV, that stool jumped and tilted. And I thought, what was that?
I said, no, that didn't happen.
I didn't see that. Well, what was that? So I thought, well, I'm not going to let it, whatever it is, I'm not going to let it know that it scared me. So I'm going to keep watching TV until there's a commercial. So I thought, if that stool really moved, that there would be an indentation in the carpet.
Right. Yep.
And there was.
And there was.
Yeah.
It had moved about an inch. Right?
It had moved an inch. So I thought, okay, I'm turning off the TV and I'm going to bed now.
Yep, I had enough of this.
I had enough of that. So in the morning, I came downstairs and got breakfast, and I went down to the cellar to figure out what was going on with the washer and the dryer. Well, all the knobs on the washer and the dryer had been moved. And I thought, what is going on here? So I had to leave the house. I couldn't stay in the house. And got another minute. So I left the house and I asked one of my neighbors, do you know anything about the people that used to live here? And then she starts telling me a story. There was a family of four. The mother died in a hospital. The father died in my bedroom. And then they had two kids. One was a young girl and then a younger boy. They shared the back bedroom. The girl tormented her brother and he wound up hanging himself in the house. And my neighbor says, I can't remember now if it was the attic or the basement. I said, it was the basement. I know it was the basement.
Yeah.
And he hung himself, and I think that's why the stool tipped. He must have, there's a cross beam there.
Yeah,
and
it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like you said, he probably stood on the stool.
Stood on the stool and jumped.
And, but that is so sad.
Isn't it?
Do you have any idea how old he was? Or like, was he like
I think he was about 11.
Oh, 11?
Yeah. Very sad.
It is.
And I had had a party there, too, and one of the psychics said, you know, the boy upstairs in the back bedroom is very active, and I didn't think it was haunted, so I didn't know what she was talking about.
Right. But you found out.
But I found out.
Okay. Hey, you know what?
I know.
We're just about out of time.
Yeah.
But thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
For coming in.
That was fun.
Being a guest tonight.
Yeah, so there's a real variety in the book if people are really interested in strange paranormal stories, including ghosts and out-of-body and strange dreams and evil entities.
Evil entities and black hands and all kinds of stuff. And it should be out hopefully by about the end of this month.
Yep.
And it will be available on Amazon.com.
And Amazon and Kindle.
Okay.
By the end of June.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you again. That was fun.
And
I'll do the same for you when you come out with your book.
Well, yeah. When mine is finished, you got to.
Absolutely.
You probably got a few years to think about that before it happens. So you have been listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, and we will talk to you, July 1st will be the next live show. We'll be doing a couple of best ofs the next couple of weeks. And so, everybody, have a good night.
Thanks for listening.
Gateway to the Paranormal by Lynn M. Nickerson is now available in paperback and Kindle at Amazon.com. You have been listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, with your hosts, Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson, on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
It is what it is, and whatever time.